You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
Something's coming.
Stand by. Hold on to your hats. Here we go.
Welcome to the Screamcast, episode 141. I am Sean DeRager, and with me is Brad Henderson.
Hey, Sean, what's up?
Also joining us back for round two, Stephanie Crawford. What's up?
Ahoy, hoy. What's up?
Welcome back to the Screamcast.
Thank you. I'm really happy to be back.
And joining us for what's on our doorstep and the news, Josh Obershaw. What's up, man?
Hey, surprise. How's it going?
This wasn't a surprise. I knew this was going to happen.
Well, it's a surprise to anybody who's listening to this. I'm pretty sure nobody was expecting me to be here this early.
It's funny you think people are listening.
Hold on. Let me open up my vanilla Coke Zero.
Oh, that
will be going extinct.
I'm so relieved I can still find it. Every time I go to the grocery store, I'm like, are they still going to be here?
I act like a ridiculous hoarder whenever I go to the store. I'm grabbing like 3 to 5 12 packs or a few 24 packs, whatever I can muster. I'm grabbing as much as I can.
I'm not going to be the one to judge you for that. So,
hell no.
I like the Coke Zero Cherry. Those are pretty good. I'm actually drinking one. Are we all drinking Coke Zero right now?
Unfortunately,
so.
No.
Oh, okay.
I'm stuck with Gatorade tonight. I gotta stock up on Friday. I buy the vanilla or the cherry one because I know nobody else will touch it.
Yeah. Well, but pretty soon it's going to be Coke Zero Sugar, and they changed the recipe.
There is no difference at all. I can attest to that.
Okay. All right. So the human recipe. Dad jokes.
Stop.
Happening now.
Just all right. Stop.
All right, here we stop. Go. So today we have BJ's unable to join us today. She will be back next time. We are going to be, after our What's on Your Doorstep segment, going to be diving into 5 Paul Naschy flicks that you can find out now at the Paul Naschy collection on Scream Factory. So we'll be talking about that in just a little bit. But first, let's just figure out what's on our doorstep.
Holy cow, I almost forgot.
We'll get the door.
Pizza.
Why don't somebody else go first? I don't want to go. Let Stephanie go first.
Jeez. Okay.
There you go.
Well, like a lot of good people out there, I did the Arrow sale, and then I did the Kino sale. I may have gone back to doing another one so.
Oh, man.
I kind of like to watch things as they come in so it doesn't get, like, all piled up. With Kino, they're really great with Vincent Price. So I went ahead and made sure I got things like The Crimson Cult. And, you know, the great classics like Dr. Goldfoot and The Bikini Machine.
Ooh.
Which I think is everyone's favorite, right?
I don't think I've seen that.
Is that an old Baba movie?
You know what the sequel is? The Dr. Goldfoot and the Girl Bombs is the Baba.
Okay, that's the Baba film. Okay.
Which I also got, of course.
Yeah. Those movies are a lot of fun.
They're a lot of fun, but man, the Baba one is rough to watch. Because I'm like, oh, I'm going to see his take on these like goofy 60s comedies, and it was terrible. It was really, really terrible. And I love the first one.
I haven't seen them forever. The first one's okay, right?
Yeah, it's really cute. Frankie Avalon, everything, but... yeah, and recently I watched The Exterminator from nice. Arrow. Nice and bleak, but I guess it's kind of a good time for bleak.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I totally. Think that movie is super important right now. Like, especially kind of the route we're going, you know, I think it's, I think there could be a resurgence with Exterminator.
Yeah. Oh, no, I'm not going to get depressed about it. And I also watched Pit Stop, which is wonderful. And I'd always go around saying I'm a Jack Hill fan, but I was saying that without saying Pit Stop. But it's fantastic. Sid Haig is so young in it. It's just this gorgeous black and white, you know, film, car crashes. It is amazing. So I've had a lot of fun when these labels do their sales. I can check out things that I hadn't gotten around to.
Definitely. Definitely. All right. Anything else?
No, they'll probably do it for right now. Oh, Crimes of Passion. Ooh. Finally saw Crimes of Passion.
I've been waiting to hear your thoughts about this one.
Yeah. Oh, I loved it. I wasn't expecting to be so emotionally connected to it. Because, you know, it's a little batshit and it's just gorgeous, but the performances kind of... Yeah. No, the performances really caught me off guard. I highly recommend it. It was fantastic.
Yeah, I think we talked about that before. We all kind of dug it. Yeah, yeah. I look at more like a kind of a stage play, though.
Yes, there were so many scenes. I'm like, this is a play. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
So I think it took me out of it a tiny bit, but I still enjoyed it. I like how sleazy and, you know, wet it was. But, you know, I like wet movies. I'm perfect. Sorry.
Yeah. All right. And with that, Josh.
Josh. What's arrived on your doorstep lately, good sir?
Surprisingly, a ton of shit that I failed to make any time to get through. I barely hit the tip of the iceberg. But you know what? Actually, this first one I want to talk about, this is a first-time watch for me, which might sound very, very surprising, considering the band that got their name from this movie is one of my favorite groups of all time. And it's Mario Bava's Black Sabbath, which you, Stephanie, I know you told me to just outright buy. So that's exactly what I did.
Was I wrong?
You were not wrong. Now, the version that I ended up paying for was the English language version, which is by Kino. This was also my first Kino Lorber Blu-ray that I ever bought, by the way. And I really dug it. I mean, this thing just looked absolutely gorgeous, of course. I love the stories. They're all zany in their own right. And I kind of want to see the Italian version, because I know that there was two separate versions and the three vignettes are in a completely different order, which I'm very, very curious to find out. I'm wondering, because the other version is put out by Kino here in the States, if I'm not mistaken. And I'm wondering, wow, how come they weren't put together?
That would have been a rights issue, or I guess, or something. I'm trying to figure out like which one that I have.
It ends with the English language version starts with the woman who is stealing jewelry from this dead woman. And, shit goes down, and she pays for it dearly. That's the one it starts with. The Italian version ends with that.
Yeah.
With that vignette. So the Italian version starts with the telephone.
Yeah. I have the Kino one, too, so.
And this isn't the first time that I've pretty much been bullied on Twitter to just outright buy a Bava picture.
Well, it's Bava.
The first one was, huh?
It's Bava, man. You just, if you can get it, grab a Bava flick.
I know. I'm a little unfamiliar with Bava, but the truth is I'm not. I've seen quite a few of these. I didn't think much of Hatchet for a Honeymoon, but stuff like Planet of the Vampires I really, really liked.
Yeah.
And I really want to get more. I think the next one, I've already seen it, but the DVD was really, really crummy, but it's Bay of Blood, aka Twitch of the Death Nerd. That's the next one I'm going to get. And I'm buying the Arrow version of that one because it's region free and it doesn't cost a whole lot.
There you go.
Yeah, it's a nice release.
Oh, you have that one?
Yeah. You'll be happy with it.
Oh, that's really good. Next up, this one is actually a rewatch, and it was inspired by our friends over at the Splathouse. They had their season finale, and they talked about Pieces. And I had been wanting the Grindhouse Blu-ray for a long time, so I just said, fuck it, I'm buying it. So I did it, and I got it, and I watched it again. And boy, this film looks better than it has any right to. I mean, it is a disgusting, vile piece of shit, and I fucking love it for it. But the thing that I noticed the second time around watching this movie, I found my enjoyment a little bit, not much, but it was just a little bit muted. And I think the reason why is this film is definitely an audience picture. This is a movie that deserves to be fully enjoyed being surrounded by people who love it as much as you do. Because otherwise, you know, watching it by yourself doesn't really have the same effect. I think the first time I watched it, I was so caught up in, holy shit, I can't believe what I'm seeing, that didn't even cross my mind. And the second time, I just really wanted to turn my attention to somebody for a second, go, holy shit, can you believe this? And there's nobody there. I mean, all I got is the dog just looking at me going, what the fuck's wrong with you? So I think the next time I watch Pieces, I gotta have people over to, you know, and have a few drinks. It's one of those type of movies. And the Blu-ray set is really good. I watched the documentary that's on it, 42nd Street Memories. That one is excellent. I mean, it's a lot of talking heads, but the stories are just great. It's a great little history lesson about that one stretch of street in New York City that was home to all of these grindhouse theaters, porno theaters, the, you know, the whole scuzziness of the whole thing. I'm just continually fascinated by that period of time in that part of New York City, especially that one spot. So this Blu-ray was definitely well worth it. The Spanish version of Pieces, I didn't like it as much. It felt to me like this was wannabe giallo. You know what I mean? It felt like it was trying really, really hard to be giallo because the music just completely changes the whole nature of the picture for me. It was a totally different kind of movie. Whereas with Pieces, it's just a gross, gory slasher. And it knows it's a gross, gory slasher, but it doesn't care. It loves being what it is. I feel like the Spanish version is trying a little hard to be something else.
I haven't got around to my Pieces Blu-ray yet, unfortunately.
I do highly recommend. If you have, I mean, if you love Pieces and you still haven't gotten this, get it. Because it is worth every single penny.
But Josh, did you get the puzzle? Because because if you don't have the puzzle, I don't know if it's worth as much. So
I did not get the puzzle.
You might as well send your copy to me now.
Yeah, we might as well just give it away. Very nice.
But I'm not concerned with that. I mean, that's not a big deal to me. Not as much as it used to be. I mean, I used to be one of those guys, but I pretty much let it go because, you know, yeah. it's all about the fucking movie, Sean.
I know. All right. Anything else before we move along?
I saw House of Wax, which was on Turner Classic Movies. This is the original House of Wax with Vincent Price. I know it was like a big 3D movie back in the 50s, but it doesn't necessarily, you don't necessarily have to watch it in 3D to enjoy it because this movie looks so damn good and the colors just pop and it's, the settings are just beautiful and Vincent Price is just awesome. And Charles Bronson's in this movie. He plays one of Vincent Price's assistants. And damn, was he built in this movie. I mean, just look at his arms. They're just like chiseled in rock. I couldn't believe it. I mean, I didn't even recognize Charles Bronson at first, but it's a really great movie. I mean, if you haven't seen the original House of Wax, I love it. I've never seen the remake because I'd never seen the original movie, and I didn't want to see the remake until I saw the original movie. Now that is one thing that I'm kind of weird with.
Understandable. Well, before you watch the remake of House of Wax, watch the original Tourist Trap. Because House of Wax remakes more of a Tourist Trap remake than House of Wax.
That
all
is
they
what
did
I
is
heard.
They just replaced the animatronics with wax.
That's funny.
It's pretty much the same fucking movie. It's hilarious. It's like the remake of House of Wax, pseudo remake of House of Wax, remakes of Tourist Trap, is really fucking good though. I've always really, really enjoyed it immensely.
Fan. Yeah, totally fan.
Yeah.
I want to say I've seen Tourist Trap when I was a kid, but if so, I don't remember anything about it. I need to look up that one and see it again.
Yeah, Tourist Trap's really good.
Nice.
All right. I did watch – well, I watched The Lost Boys as part of the PJ Party Massacre with the girl gang. And first time I did it, and I still love that movie. What else – what the fuck else can you say about The Lost Boys? I mean, it's a little bit personal for me because I used to live in Santa Cruz, but that's a whole different thing, but it's good. The last thing I saw, it was kind of a rewatch, but not really, because I only saw the first 10 minutes of it when my dad rented it when I was 8 years old, and that's Ninja 3 The Domination.
Yes.
Absolute insanity.
Did you watch it with a V8?
No, I didn't.
Oh. You should have poured V8 on yourself and watched it. It's a lot better that way. It's the only true way.
It's one of the
and
best.
I haven't thought about that movie in a while. You remember like that whole weird shit with when we tried to get I just lost my train of thought. Who's the girl in that? It's she was in Electric Boogaloo, Lucinda Dickey.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
And the like, she's married to some like bodybuilder or like some like sponsor of a bodybuilder, and these like bodybuilders contacted me. Why do I want to talk to her?
Holy shit!
Shit was super fucking weird. We never actually got an interview with her, but
hey, bro, why you want
the story behind it was fucking hilarious.
That is hilarious. Wow, but. I know, just revisiting this one, well, sort of revisiting. I mean, I need more canon because canon was a big deal to me when I was a kid. I mean, I love that documentary. I haven't got around to watching it yet, but I got Cobra in the mail, but I'll get to that at a later point. Like I said, I got a lot of stuff that I didn't get to.
Oh, man, I have an entire room with stacks of movies that I need to get to, so...
I mean, I've waited a long time for a moment like this. We're getting a whole bunch of stuff, and now I'm complaining that I haven't watched any of this shit yet. But whatever.
ODB.
Maybe I'll just, hell yeah. Maybe I'll just have to do a part two of this.
Yeah. I used to be able to keep up with every single thing that I would buy, like you, Stephanie. But then marriage and children happened. I just sadly put the movie on the pile, the to watch pile, and cry.
I'll just shut my entitled single ass up.
Count your blessings, everybody.
And that's all I got. That's all I got for now.
All right. I have a couple things, and then I'm sure Brad has like 50. So
funny.
Shut up. All right. The first thing I got is I finally got around to watching Ouija, Origin of Evil. And I really...
Is that the first one?
Second one.
No, it's a sequel.
Ugh.
The Mike Flanagan directed sequel. And I really dug it. Like, I really liked it. Like, it was kind of exactly what I was hoping it would be when I popped it in. Like, my only criticism would be, like, this whole thing where they digitally, like, stretch people's mouths. Like, I hate that effect. And that happens a few times in this. But I dug it. It was, it was a creepy. It's something that I can, you know, watch with my daughter probably, and she'd get a kick out of it. And, you know, Mike Flanagan, like, he's a good director. Like, I'm still waiting for him to really either get the script or the budget, you know, because I think he has a lot of style, and he's a very competent horror director. But I think with the right pieces are eventually going to come together, and I think he's going to give us something really special. But yeah, it's a really good sequel. I mean, I'm hearing the new Annabelle is kind of like better than the first kind of sequel. So if Annabelle's anything like this, I would give it a shot, you know, the second one. But you know, I thought it was fun. If you are curious about it, and you would, it would be a solid rental. Like, I would never
show. That shit put me to fucking sleep.
Really? I dug it. I really.
I can't, honestly, dude, I can't remember one thing about the original Ouija film, and I've watched it twice.
I never saw the original, so.
And I've seen the second one, I think, twice, and all I can remember is, like, some kind of trick with the curtains and them sitting at some table, like, tricking people out.
Well, no,
honestly, I don't remember.
I think you just fell asleep and never watched it again.
Oh no! I've seen it. It's just really boring.
I dug it, man. Like, the daughter is generally gets creepy, and she says a few things in the film that are like, you know, like, definitely gave me some goosebumps, because a kid shouldn't be saying things like that. I can't remember the quote, but she, you know, yeah. I don't know. I dug the hell out of it. So
I never saw the first one. Would I be able to watch this one without seeing the first one?
Oh yeah, I haven't seen the first one either.
That was the thing that kept me from checking it out at the library today. Yes, you can actually find Ouija Origin of Evil at your local library if you look. But yeah, I mean, I heard bad things about the first movie, but I heard good things about the second one. But I still didn't pick it up.
Yeah, so. I would say give it a shot if you find it at the library or rental, Redbox rental, if it ever is on Netflix. Like, I would say you know. You'd have a good time with it. He does one weird thing, though, like, because it takes place in the 70s, and he does this thing where he has that little real change dot that kind of shows up, you know, if you're watching something projected. And he does that in the film for each quote-unquote real. And that's, like, so unnecessary. It almost took me out of the film.
It doesn't feel authentic.
It's like,
yeah, with all this digital shit.
Yeah, there's CGI, and it's like, dude, you're not. I mean, just leave that crap out of it and just make a competent film. Like, I don't know who thought that was a good idea. So, like, my only criticisms would be a few little things like that. Otherwise, you know, like I said, I'm totally gonna watch this with my daughter. She wants to watch kind of. She's trying to get into horror, and there's, you know, I'll watch things first, and then I'll kind of jot down all right things that I'll watch with her. And this is definitely on that list.
Aww. Yeah. You know, I really loved Absentia, and I enjoyed Oculus, but everything else this dude has done, like Before I Wake, was obviously terrible because it's still not released in America. You know, there was fucking, we won't even talk about Ouija, we already did that. And then fucking Hush. God damn, I fucking hated Hush so much.
A lot of people liked Hush, though. I haven't watched it yet. I'm gonna.
Yeah, that's because a lot of people are easily entertained.
Wow. Now we're gonna get a negative comment. Brad is a pretentious fuck. That's gonna happen. All right.
This is equivalent to Deepwater Horizon to me. And I fucking hate that movie.
I thought it was good. All right, whatever. All right, moving along. I watched the new Undisputed movie starring Scott Adkins. Boyka! Undisputed 4. It was awesome. Any fans of the Undisputed series here?
I never even heard of the
cricket noise.
Holy shit. Undisputed.
I've never watched the Undisputed movies, like 1 and 2, but I've watched... the part where Scott Adkins is in 3. Yeah.
Well, he's in 2. And then, he's the villain in 2. He's Boyka in 2. He's the villain.
I didn't watch that, but I did watch 4.
2 is pretty... You could actually start at 2 and be just fine. The first one's okay. First one's kind of sucks. But Undisputed 2, 3, and then now 4, like, you have a solid prison fight movies trio there to watch. And Scott Adkins as Boyka, like, I love this character. He's it's just a straight up badass. I think it's the most badass that I've seen Scott Adkins, because he'll when he stars in a movie, he's kind of plays this more of a soft spoken like guy that, but he can kick some ass. Like this, he's straight up like he's playing this Russian murderer basically who's been in life in prison and gets caught up in this underground prison fighting ring. This one, it starts out, he's, spoiler for Undisputed 3, he gets out of jail. So this one finds him, he's in this underground kickboxing thing. He's found religion, and he ends up killing one of his opponents on accident, and it kind of, he has some faith, you know, torture, it kind of tortures his faith and a little bit, and he wants to track down this guy that he killed, his wife, who's in Russia, so he has to smuggle himself into Russia, wants to find the wife to kind of make amends or try to help her, and he gets caught up in some Russian mafia shit. That's all I'll say about it. But I like this one a lot because my background, of course, anything that has like people wrestling with their faith or whatever, like that's always something that my ears kind of perk up and I'll pay a little more attention. That's a really cool aspect of this one that the other movies didn't have. The fights are just choreographed awesome. Like they're really good. And it's a solid Undisputed flick. Like for me, I think it's my favorite one so far. I would have to rewatch them again to kind of see which one's my favorite, but, I really, really dug this. So if you're a fan of Undisputed, that series, and, this is just as good, probably just as good as any of those other ones. Except the first one. The first one for me is a bit weak, but once Scott Adkins enters with Boyka, I think it's definitely worth watching.
Yeah, I like it.
And finally, I'm not going to talk too much about this, but I watched this last night with my wife. The new King Arthur movie is actually really fucking fun. So I don't know where all these horrible reviews came from. It has like a Siamese twins, you know, how they're stuck together. Well, it's like a Siamese triplet, but it's like has tentacles and it's like a water creature. And
the middle one is
like super ugly, and like two are like super hot tentacle women creatures. It has that in it, and then it has like giant elephants attacking a castle, and like awesome.
Well,
like,
congratulations! Wizards you just talked me out of watching the movie.
So it's like,
you just talked me into it.
Yeah, I nearly choked when he was describing that. I think he sold me too.
It's a Guy Ritchie film. If you like Guy Ritchie, you'll like this.
That explains everything.
He kind of plays the timelines a little bit. Someone will ask, like, how did you get here? And they'll kind of talk. He'll go back and see how they got there or whatever. He'll play with that. There's banter back and forth. Charlie Hunnam, whatever his name is actually pretty good. They don't bro things out like they kind of did in, like, Sherlock Holmes. They kind of made him into, like, this, fight. Like, I don't know. They made Sherlock Holmes
shit.
too much of a brawler. It makes sense, but they don't go that route where they bro him out a bit. Like, I don't know. I had fun with it. It's more, for me, more of like a fantasy, fantasy flick loosely based on the King Arthur legend. If you can get past all that and just have fun with Guy Ritchie attempting fantasy, is a lot of fun to be had. For me, it's like just a fun popcorn flick. And like I said, like some cool creature fantasy stuff in it too. So...
Well, nothing's ever going to beat Excalibur, but I don't think anything can be as bad as First Knight. I mean, dear God. So, yeah, I'll give this a shot.
Making a noise, or is that snoring?
That was snoring.
So, anyway, if you're curious about it and you like, it's better than a couple of the Hobbit movies. I can say that. And I'm a fan of the Hobbit movies, so...
Dude, I didn't even know those. I didn't know those movies came out until we were talking on the podcast one time.
The Hobbit movies. Oh shit! They released those. Anyway, that's all I got.
I'll just stick to Antoine Fuqua's director's cut of King Arthur. I dug that.
Yeah, I could. That actually.
Is this a sequel to it, or is it just
its
like
own thing? It's basically a retelling of how he got Excalibur and all that kind of stuff. And
okay, bye.
And there's some, you know, his father, there's some, you know, a tyrant king took over, killed his father, and he, you know, he's realizing he's Arthur and all that stuff. But I don't know. You know, it's for me, it's fun. But, you know, that Anton Fuqua King Arthur, though, is pretty badass. So I don't know,
yeah,
if
I, like it.
I don't know if it's better than that, because that was pretty fucking cool. And the director's cut is pretty good. So, no, it's, but they're completely different animals. Whereas Anton Fuqua's, he tries to base it in reality. This just goes balls out with the fantasy. So,
well, you said an elephant beast thing, and I was just, I said no.
Crank that sound up, man. If you have a good sound system, just crank it up.
Maybe when I don't have anything else to watch in life, I'll give it a shot.
You know what, Brad? You'll probably hate it, so don't watch it.
Yeah.
With our track record, you'll probably hate it.
Hey, I've surprised you a couple times with shit.
You have. All right.
You know, I'll text you and be like, bro, why is this so good and I shouldn't like this movie? Oh, it's my turn?
It's your turn. You have 2 minutes. All right. Go.
Sure. Well, I've watched, I was just looking at my list because I, you know, keep a tally. I've watched 100 movies since our last show.
Holy shit.
Yeah. I believe it.
So I will just pick out maybe like 3. So give me a second. Well, since you mentioned it and you talked about that Ouija bullshit, I actually saw Annabelle Creation.
Okay.
It's pretty fucking terrible. I didn't think it could be worse than the first one. And I mean, there's more scares, but it's just all jump scares. That's all they do. The entire movie. There'll probably be about 6 spinoffs from this movie of creatures and things that happen. And then I remember reading about people like talking about how awesome the tie-in is. And if you actually paid attention in Annabelle, the tie-in actually doesn't make any lick of sense whatsoever. It was hilarious because my 12-year-old daughter turned to me after the film and she like looks and starts yelling as the movie's ending, saying this doesn't make any sense. And she got pissed off. And I was like, what are you talking about? And she was like, listen, this is what happened. This is what's happening. It doesn't make sense. And I was like, oh shit, you're right. I didn't even fucking think of that. And I was like, good Lord. I was like, how oblivious is that shit? But for anybody that watches it, just pay attention to the events that happen at the end, of course, that tie into the first one. It really doesn't make any sense. It's just one of those things where I think people would be like, oh shit, yeah, and then like forget about it. But if you really, 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 really think, it doesn't make any sense whatsoever. So, yeah, I was not happy with it. A couple jump scares that are all right, a couple gags, but yeah, that's about it. I watched Personal Shopper with Kristen Stewart. I really like Personal Shopper. It's a very odd telling of a ghost story. She is a ghost.
She's a ghost what?
Well, I took a pause there because trying to think of the best way to describe her, because she's not like a ghost hunter. But she is hired to kind of contact the dead.
Okay.
So she can go into a place and kind of talk to the dead. There's a couple other things that are in the film that are intriguing, a personal relationship, stuff like that she's dealing with. But it's like a haunted house movie, but a drama at the same time. It's really, really good. I didn't know Kristen Stewart stripped down to basically nothing in movies. So that was something. I was like, okay. I didn't know you did this. Cause I was still thinking she was like, you know, like 18. I didn't know she was older. Like I'm watching it and I was like, whoa. And I like looked up her IMDb. It's like, oh, you're like a full blown adult now. You know, you are a woman, so you're allowed to do this.
Did this podcast just get a little weird?
It did. Well, it was weird for me because when you're watching a movie and you're thinking it's like, I was still thinking, like, I don't know why. I don't keep up with Kristen Stewart's life.
Yeah.
But I was always thinking she was the little girl in the panic room. And I haven't really watched many movies with Kristen Stewart in them, yeah, other than like American Ultra. But I wasn't thinking about that. I was just watching it, and then she just strips down. I was like, wait a second, how old is she? And then I look, and I was like, way, way off. But it's other than that, we should be talking about the movie. But Personal Shopper is really, really good. I think Criterion's releasing it very, very soon. Yeah, it's really, really worth it. The only thing I had, not against the film, but red flags is, man, the fucking ghost effects that they did were just so like late 1990s. I was really hoping that they could pull off something that looked a little more believable rather than look like someone threw like chalk at the screen and just let it float on. And then let's see, I watched, well, I'll get to this now. I watched the other last night I watched Bag Boy Lover Boy by Severin. Holy shit. This movie is fucking like 76 minutes and it doesn't waste a fucking second. It the best way to describe it is if Henan Lauder and Abel Ferreira got together and made a modern day movie in New York. This is kind of what it would be like. It's a hot dog vendor who I don't know if he's supposed to be like, it felt like he may, not like Asperger's, but like he, like something's up with the actor. I don't know if he's like, he could be from a different country, but he talks very, like when he speaks, it's just very odd. So it already is unsettling, because it feels almost like exploitation of the actor in a way, which I kind of dug, because it felt very 70-ish and 80s, like grimy, like street New York movies. And he's picked up by a guy that comes up, buys a hot dog, finds out he takes pictures. This intrigues, his name's Albert, and the hot dog vendor intrigues Albert. He wants to learn how to take pictures, but they're just using him in these like weird scenarios. And then he wants to just start taking pictures himself and takes it to another level. The pictures that he is taking are, he doesn't do anything violent. It's just that it's supposed to be violent acts that they're trying to capture. So he like puts a bag over a woman's head and another one acts like a pig in a slaughterhouse and he, you know, pokes her and, you know, is quote unquote killing her in the shoot. But then he takes shit to his own personal level and gets really weird. It's very like Driller Killer-ish too. Like there's a lot of Driller Killer vibes going on through the film. Amongst the other 100 movies I've seen, I don't know if I'm going to talk about anything else. So,
all right.
Josh Obershaw joins us with the news. Josh, what you got?
Well, today I found something on Amazon when I was, you know, just looking. Actually, I was just killing time waiting for at my doctor's appointment. But I found that Paramount's putting out a new Blu-ray of Escape from L.A. And, yeah. Apparently, it was out of print for a little while and super expensive. But it's
Didn't
coming
Screen
back.
Didn't Screen Factory do that? Oh, no, it was New York.
Escape from New York.
Oh.
Yeah, Escape from L.A. is going to be coming out on September 26th. This is according to the Amazon listing that I came across. Next up from Olive Films, they're going to be putting out Larry Cohen's Hell Up in Harlem. That one comes out on August 29th. No special features to speak of or anything like that. I got a couple from Scorpion to mention. First one is 1981's Kill and Kill Again. That one is coming out on October 3rd. And they also have 1973's Lady Ice coming out later in the year. and that is said to have a brand new remaster, and the film will be presented in its original aspect ratio of 2.39:1 for the first time ever. So that's from Scorpion. And speaking of Scorpion, let's just move right along to Kino Lorber, because this one I know a lot of people are going to be excited about, because we finally have a release date for Rawhead Rex. And the date is October 17th, just in time for Halloween.
Hey, and it's a few days after my birthday. Hint, hint, everybody.
Hell yeah.
Because I'm not going to pay $30 for a slipcase.
I will. What the fuck?
Have you seen the movie?
I haven't seen the movie, so I'm like very wary of buying it, because I hear the movie's not that great, and I'm unsure. Not to have you rattle off all the special features, Josh, but is there anything on there that looks like it could possibly make $30 well spent?
Well, the audio commentary with the director, it's moderated by Stephen Thorer, so that was the selling point for me. Okay. I mean, there's an interview with the actor that plays Rawhead Rex, a few of the other people, the special effects crew, whatnot, a booklet essay. The one time I saw this movie, I was 10 years old. My folks rented it. I was really excited to see it because it was a monster movie. This was the first time that I was ever severely disappointed by a monster movie in my entire life. So if a 9-year-old is disappointed with something like Rawhead Rex, that should give you a hint as to how bad this movie is.
Wow.
But someone just reminded me that I read the short story, the original short story, later in my adult years, and there was that whole thing with, you know, the monster pissing on the priest, and apparently that was in the movie. I'm like, I don't remember that.
Yeah, it's in the movie.
Well, I'm fucking buying it just for that. So there's just way too many incentives for me to get this. So I'm definitely buying it.
$30 is worth a Stephen Thrower moderated audio commentary and the scene where monster pisses on a priest.
Yep.
Okay.
You know, this movie has the oddest following, and I don't understand it, because everybody you meet that talks about is like, oh my god, Rawhead Rex is amazing. It's so fucking stupid. And I was like, no, I understand the stupid part. I don't understand why you like it. Like, why? Like, the fans are fucking die hard over this movie.
Yeah.
This is like the next Troll 2. Mark my words. If it's not already.
No. I'll just sell my tape for like $100.
All right. Well, I've got some more stuff to get through. A few more Kino Lorber things. Night Angel from 1990. This is going to be the first time that it's ever been on DVD and Blu-ray. That one's coming out on March 24th. That one has a few cool extras too.
I can sell my tape on that one too. How much is that shit worth? I like to do this. You sell tapes, and they fucking go for like $100 because people are dumb. I love it.
Let's see. What else from Kino Lorber? Yeah, Rolling Vengeance from 1987. That one's coming out on the 17th. Stone Cold Dead on October 3rd. That's going to be the first time it's ever been on DVD and Blu-ray. And here we go, more Baba, Kill Baby Kill from 1966. That one's coming out on October 10th.
Yes. A week after my birthday, hint, hint.
I'll make a note of it.
We'll post our Amazon wish lists in the show notes, everybody.
Yeah, and Brad's VHS for sale list.
There you go.
I'm going to be rich this year. Fucking Rolling Vengeance, Night Angel, Rawhead Rex. I'm going to make a fucking ton of money.
At least a couple hundy.
What was the other one you said?
It was Night Angel, Rolling Vengeance, Stone Cold Dead.
Stone Cold Dead. I don't know what the fuck that is.
I've never heard of that one either.
Let me check it out. You can keep talking. I'm just looking it up.
Okay. Well, that's it for Kino Lorber. I'm moving on to Scream Factory. There's a release date for The Resurrected. That one's September 12th. This one's pretty much packed. A 2K remaster. There's a whole bunch of interviews, including, and I know BJ will love this one, The Resurrected Man, an interview with Chris Sarandon.
Oh.
The deleted and extended scenes from the work print and home video trailer and Japanese trailer. So that's pretty cool. VCI Entertainment just announced four titles. For November 7th, they're going to be releasing Satan's Cheerleaders and The Aftermath. They've also got The Twilight People, 1 Million BC. There's no release dates for those. It just says late 2017. Also for late 2017, they're releasing the movie Ruby. And that has bonus features listed. That's the only one out of these titles that has bonus features listed. It's a 2K restoration trailer, commentary with the director, and Curtis Arrington and actress Piper Laurie. Kind of read that wrong, but I don't care. So that is VCI Entertainment. Next up, Umbrella is releasing The Entity on September 6th. It is region locked, but who knows? Maybe some people can play it on there.
Fucking people are going to release The fucking Entity on fucking Blu-ray. Jesus Christ.
Hasn't that already been out?
Yeah, like fucking everybody's released that shit. It's weird.
The last, I didn't know it was on Blu-ray. The last one I remember is the Anchor Bay DVD.
Yeah, no, it's
no, on, man, I have, yeah, it's on Blu-ray. I have the Eureka one, and I have whatever the other one, Blu-ray. Let me look. I'm beside it.
Excuse me.
I don't even see that shit. I must have sold the old one. I just have the Eureka one up here. But yeah. Yeah, it's been on Blu-ray in the States and in the UK. That's weird. What was, I'm getting confused with all these titles. You said Ruby? I thought that's like confirmed they're doing that? Because I know that there was some rights issues with that. Yeah, I remember them talking about.
Yeah, it's been confirmed. I mean, the features have all been said.
Cool.
They don't have a firm release date, but that's what they're working on.
And you said The Aftermath is getting a Blu-ray release, right?
Yeah, that one is November 7th.
Sweet. I'll get The Aftermath for sure. Sid Haig up in the shit.
Yeah.
Because I have that on DVD. Fucking Steve Barkett is the fucking man. They need to do Empire of the Dark next because I think they released that on DVD. They needed to put that on Blu-ray. It's only two Steve Barkett movies he's ever done.
Wow. Oh, and yeah, if you missed out on The Dead Next Door, that Ultimate Edition that went out of print, well, Tempe Entertainment is going to be putting out a two-disc collector's edition on September 26th. It's practically the same Blu-ray as the one in the out-of-print version. It's going to be a Blu-ray plus DVD.
Very nice.
And let's see, 88 Films is releasing their own Blu-ray of Street Trash on November 20th. So that's a little treat for our UK friends. And Mill Creek is putting out a 50th anniversary edition of Night of the Living Dead. I know there are some people that are bummed out by this. I know one guy was saying, well, so much for the Criterion. I'm like, this movie is public domain.
Yeah.
Criterion, I mean, just because because Mill Creek is putting it out, that's not going to stop Criterion.
Dude, people put out fucking Night of the Living Dead every fucking 6 months.
Exactly.
And Janus Films is doing a tour in October with a 4K restoration that they did.
Yep.
So
don't lose hope. If you don't want to buy the Mill Creek, don't buy it. But if you can't wait, then the release date for that is October 17th. And last but not least, we have the Vinegar Syndrome September package. Now, the street date for the entire thing is going to be September 26th. If you buy the whole package before then, it's going to be 40% off. But if you just want the Blu-ray package, it's going to be 35% off. Now, what are they going to be putting out in September? The previously announced Psychos in Love. This thing is totally loaded, and it's also gonna have one of those slipcases, one of those really thick slipcases that they're gonna put on the first 1,000, 2,000, whatever. If you buy it directly for them, of course. And I believe it's the same thing for Orgy of the Dead. From the mind of Ed Wood comes Orgy of the Dead. Horror novelist John and his girlfriend Shirley are taken to Night Drive in search of an eerie graveyard that will hopefully inspire John to come up with his next story, but then shit goes down, blah, blah, blah. All you have to say was Ed Wood. I'm sold. I'll get this one. And the other one, the other Blu-ray, is going to be Trip with the Teacher.
Uh-oh, this sounds like a naughty one. Is it a naughty
one? I believe so. I think it's a naughty one. Maybe not.
No, it's not.
Nope, okay. All right.
Not as naughty as...
It's one of the old Mill Creek batch. It's one of the... I always say Crown Royal.
Crown International.
Crown International. Thank you, Sean. Crown International titles.
Speaking of Crown Royal, I might need to make myself a drink.
It's like up there with what we just talked about, Malibu High. It's on one of those sets.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
So they're going to release all those. I'll eventually be able to unload my 50 title DVD Mill Creek things after Vinegar Syndrome gets done after a couple of years.
For a full $25.
Right.
Oh, dude, no, some of those are way out of print now.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, there's a couple of those Mill Creek things that are pretty expensive.
All right.
I'm so excited for how profitable this episode is for
Pat. I know, right?
I know. Oh, yeah.
He's probably going to possibly put his daughter through college. Or yes. At least maybe buy a book.
It's going to be a sweet Christmas nonetheless.
All right. What else are they putting out?
There's going to be the DVD-only picture, which is going to be Dark Dreams. That's a naughty horror.
A tale of erotic fantasy.
Yep.
Mm.
And Harry Reams. Harry Reams. Yeah, this is the naughty haunted house one, if I'm not mistaken.
Very nice.
And of course the Peekarama is actually going to be a big 3-unit show. Hey.
Oh.
The pictures are triple feature: The Sins, The Simple Pleasures of Reverend Starr, Kinky Tricks, and China Lust.
China Lust. Linda Wong's in that shit.
Yep. And wow,
I seen that. Last Peekarama was 3 titles too.
Was it?
Yeah, I believe so.
Very nice.
No, it was just 2.
No, well, they did one with that Ralph, whatever his name is, Eli or whatever. Maybe it was the time before last.
Well, I know last month they had their first Blu-ray DVD combo in the Sexploitation Signature Series. And that was like a limited thing, but no, the Peekarama was just 2 movies. It was Sunny and More Than Sisters. But whatevs. That's your Vinegar Syndrome package, and that is the news. And I'm sorry to say, folks, that is it for me this week.
All right, Josh. Hey, thanks for joining us, man.
Oh, no problem. Do this awesome. Again sometime.
Awesome. Yep, we'll talk to you next time.
Cool.
All right, man.
So, bye, you guys.
All right, we are ready to get our Nashy on. Stephanie Crawford, of course, is still with us, as well as Brad Henderson.
It's almost, you could just say, time to get Nashy.
Yeah. Ah, man, I missed opportunity.
I wanted to say that, but I didn't want to step out of bounds.
No, you should have said that. I suck. Damn. It's time to get Nashy. That's so much better. See, this is why I just bring smarter people in to the show than me. And actually,
what am I doing here? All
right. Well, this Scream Factory set is out. It's there's 5 movies in it. I'm just going to list the movies really quick on what's in this set, and then we're going to probably do some intro to Nashy here. But the set includes Horror Rises from the Tomb, Vengeance of the Zombies, Blue Eyes of the Broken Doll, Human Beasts, and Night of the Werewolf. And when this, it comes in a nice little slipcase, not as sturdy as the Vinegar Syndrome ones, though, or the Arrow ones. That's one area that Scream Factory needs to step up their game, in my opinion.
Yeah, they bend in the mail too easy, too.
Yeah, they just get destroyed.
I've seen a lot of people complaining. I mean, I don't really give a shit, but yeah.
But I
think it's honestly, I think it's one of those things where, you know, this is not a rip on anybody, but I think Scream Factory really adheres to the common horror fan, and Arrow and Vinegar Syndrome, well, I think there's different calibers too. Arrow tends to hit the cult side of people, and then Vinegar Syndrome hits the weird side of people.
Yeah.
So I think that if one of the other, even Vinegar Syndrome released something, or, you know, Arrow, I think they're a little not apprehensive. They have kind of a stronger, I don't know, fan base, I think, and a more loyal fan base, just because of the issues that have came out from Scream Factory. But I think it's one of those things where they just don't know how people are going to react, because I don't think they're that well in tune with how big kind of Paul Naschy is, and like how excited people are going to be. I felt like this could have been like a more like Vincent Price set.
Yeah, totally.
But I think maybe they'll take their time with this volume 2 that they've just announced. So I'm pretty excited. I'm glad, because obviously they wouldn't have done it if it wasn't a big probably sale for them, unless they did a deal with Victory Films to release all the Paul Naschy films. I don't know, because that's who owns all this shit at this point.
Well, they probably did something tentative, but when they announced it, I like Paul Naschy is a blind spot for me. So I don't think I'd have ever seen a Paul Naschy film. I didn't really know who it was. And I was like, well, what the hell is this? You know? And then I started reading about the films, and I got kind of a, you know, like Vincent Price vibe, horror or a Hammer Films vibe from what I was reading and about him and everything. And, I was very intrigued. So of course this was a no brainer for me to grab, and, I think I fell in love with some Naschy, everyone.
I don't see how you can't. My mom introduced me to Paul Naschy when I was younger, because she told me that my dad looked like Paul Naschy. My dad always got two people. When he was older, Ernest Borgnine, and then when he was younger, Paul Naschy. Wow. And when I very first introduced to Paul Naschy, I was like, oh my God, like, that's like when my dad got out of the military, that's what my dad looked like.
Huh.
Oh, wow. Like, as far as like the hair placement, you know, cause Paul Naschy was a weightlifter back in the day. So my dad like was my dad's still a big dude, but I mean, back in his prime, he was like, he was fucking huge, and he even looks like Paul Naschy, like from pictures. I'm sure I'll send Stephanie some pictures, because I know that.
Thank she you. I don't want to be creepy, ask for him, but if you're gonna,
can you send me pictures of your dad?
Preferably the younger pictures.
Any with his shirt off, I'll take. Okay.
Is he We're the biggest wood in any of them?
He might be. I don't know. So. But yeah, my mom told me about that, and she, I can't remember, honestly, I wish I could remember the first Paul Naschy film that she showed me. I think I was maybe a little too young, and I wasn't as interested, because it was one of my very first like foreign films. And I don't think my mom, and when I say that, my mom wasn't like a big Paul Naschy fan. She just knew who he was. So I think she put on one of the movies. I don't even think she was interested, because she's always kind of been, not a fan of, subtitles per se. And I think when I very first saw it, I didn't know what was happening either, cause I was very young. But, it wasn't until I think when I was like 13 or 14, there were a couple Spanish horror films at Blockbuster down the street, and I rented those, and those both had Paul Naschy. And then I researched who he was and saw he had like this reoccurring werewolf thing that he was doing, and I try to find out, try to find as many films as I could with him in it. At that time, they were pretty hard to find, because it was mostly bootlegs that were being traded. So it was mostly bootleg VHS tapes that I found in Ohio at a rental store. But yeah, I started getting in it very young. Some of his films are complete misses, like Vengeance of the Zombies, and then like some of them are just like out of this world amazing, like Human Beasts. So, anyways,
Stephanie, what's your relationship with Paul Naschy?
I probably fall in between both of you. I first heard of him probably in my early 20s. I grew up with Vincent Price, and I always had an interest in the older horror films, Hammer, The Universal. And if you start researching those films at all, Naschy's name will come up. And when you see all the work he did, it's kind of mind-blowing that we don't hear of him more than we do. But, you know, the films are in Spanish, so I don't really have a whole lot of memories. I think I was kind of a frenzy watching everything at one time. But my first was Frankenstein's Bloody Terror. And I still have my Shriek Show DVD of that. And yeah, he made a big impression on me. And it's been a lot of fun rediscovering him on Blu-ray. I have the out of print victory double of Vengeance of the Zombies and Night of the Werewolf. And
you should sell it. It sells for really good money right now.
I was going to, but they have intros that Naschy filmed for them that didn't make it onto the screen. I'm like, no, you can't do it now. And then Count Dracula's Great Love with Vinegar Syndrome. That was a very unexpectedly sweet movie, I thought.
It's really good.
So I've been familiar with them for around 10 years or so, but I'm certainly not an expert.
Very nice. Brett, did we cover Count Dracula's? We covered Count Dracula's Great Love on the show, didn't we?
Yeah, we talked about it.
Holy shit.
Well, you said this is your first, should have been your first step.
That was one of the titles
you didn't watch.
No, I watched it, and I just didn't put two and two together, I guess.
His name's plastered all over the front cover.
I know. What the fuck? What's wrong with me?
I don't know.
Dreamy, Sean.
I know. Well, I didn't know who. I mean, I didn't really look at the names or anything, and then this crossed my path before I knew of the Naschy.
Okay.
I didn't pay attention. Right.
I was just like, "There's this dreamy Count Dracula. Looks like he could do some pretty good weight at the deadlift." You know, that's all I thought.
Yeah, actually, I mean,
if you go to his website, Naschy.com, at the bottom there is a YouTube video of the Paul Naschy workout.
Stephanie's already there.
And he's doing a deadlift.
But yeah, I agree with with Stephanie on a lot of what she said. I mean, of course, if you research any monster movies from the 60s, 50s, 60s, 70s. And anytime you do a fucking Google search on Lon Chaney and Boris Karloff, Paul Naschy comes up. But of all those people put together, Paul Naschy did everything. You know, he played basically every fucking monster known to man. He played a werewolf a bajillion times. And it was just something like, and I think it's due to the fact that the films were in Spanish is one of the reasons why he wasn't more popular as far as like on the par with as far as fame goes with Lon Chaney or Boris Karloff, but he could stand right next to those guys.
And especially he
wrote most of these fucking movies and directed them.
So
he's very accomplished, and I'm glad that when Vinegar Syndrome announced Count Dracula, you could see kind of the fans come out of the woodwork saying, "Oh my gosh, more Naschy, more Naschy." Because the films that were released on Blu-ray and a couple of these things on DVD, because I have the, you know, Curse of the Werewolf and Revenge of the Zombies as well, that Victory Blu-ray. And then I think Subculture and Germany, they released a couple of his films on DVD and Blu-ray. And then, you know, Scream Factory announced this, and then I could see, like, a lot of people, like, even, you know, just your common horror fans saying, oh, my gosh, you know. So I'm glad to see that he is kind of now, at this point, you know, very popular amongst a lot of people. And I think there's a lot of people as well that are going to get turned on to Paul Naschy and see, like, how we had – you know, this great actor, you know, this great writer, director, who was able to, you know, act and write these, like, something like Human Beasts and Night of the Werewolf are great, and just be able to set these, like, tones and themes and create the, this, you know, really eerie and beautiful atmosphere in these movies, and just kind of always be the underdog of it all at that time they were coming out. And more so get more recognition as time goes on, you know, from a cult following to, you know, almost like this, I wouldn't say international at this time, but hopefully he gains that at some point, with these movies coming out and the majority of kind of your common horror fan.
Yeah. Of this set, these five movies, what's your guys' favorite film? Mine was, I think mine was Night of the Werewolf. I had a lot of fun with that one. It was my favorite one, just because I'm partial to, I guess, monsters anyway. But I love that it was a combination, like there's the werewolf story, and then all of a sudden, you know, there's some vampires arrive. Like, I love that. And with this other kind of, let's see, Horror Rises from the Tomb, how it has that first 10 minutes take place in more of a medieval setting, and he gets a huge bang for his buck for both of those films at the beginning before it kind of transfers into quote-unquote modern day. But yeah, Night of the Werewolf was a favorite of mine. I can't wait to watch his other werewolf flicks. Stephanie, what's your favorite out of this set?
I'm a big fan of Night of the Werewolf as well. I'm very partial to Horror Rises from the Tomb as well. It's just beautiful, and I think I'm a little susceptible to the ones he's more sensitive in. I thought he showed a lot of sensitivity in that. I think that's the first Demarnak movie with that character he did.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
I think that one probably stood out. I found something enjoyable in all of them. But yeah, okay, since you did Werewolf, I'll do Horror Rises from the Tomb.
That's a fun one, too. Yeah. Brad, which one did you say was your...
Human Beasts. Human Beasts.
Yeah. Well, I want you to talk about Human Beasts a little bit, because this is what's interesting about the set, especially. Like, I thought I was going to get a bunch of kind of Hammer-feeling, like, monster movies, but there's a good variety here. You know, going into, like, Blue Eyes of the Broken Doll, like, I almost got, like a giallo feel from it, especially from the title. And then Vengeance of the Zombies was, you know, a little less. But Human Beast...
Film, like, for a quarter.
Yeah. But Human Beast is more like a Japanese... There's some Yakuza influence in that one.
I think... When you say Hammer, I think that really meets with Horror Rises from the Tomb.
Yeah.
Vengeance of the Zombies just seems like Paul Naschy made a film on a weekend with his friends.
Yeah.
And, like, he had his, like, kids, like, decorate the set.
Do Dawn of the Dead zombie makeup. Have a rape fight.
Yeah, it's just a really bizarre movie. I this is like my third time seeing it. I can't get into it.
It's my least favorite on this set for sure.
Yeah, Blue Eyes of the Broken Doll. Yeah, they're definitely more of kind of a cop procedural, like,
giallo feel to that. Night of the Werewolf kind of goes back to the Hammer, but also hits kind of like, more or less the universal monsters, I think, rather than Hammer. I think the real Hammer thing is Horror Rises from the Tomb.
Yeah.
Human Beasts, it feels like you said Yakuza. I get the Italian vibes all over it. It feels like, it feels like you're watching part like of a pseudo sequel to Mario Bava's like Kidnapped or something. I like the shootouts. I think they're great. And then it just gets fucking weird. And then it turns into, and like, this is the weird thing about it. I don't like this company, because I don't like most of the movies they put out, but it gets like this Full Moon feel to it once he actually gets to the house and they got all this weird shit. And then when the climax happens, it feels like this, like, because Italian movies did that. They're just like, oh shit, you think this is going to happen? And then it's boom, it ends and it's like, holy shit. But yeah, I like Human Beasts because it's kind of all over the place. I love the shootouts. I kind of like that, nursing back to health and then some weird shit's happening. It's just an all-around weird movie. It's kind of a genre mashup at the same time. I'm really partial to, Euro crime flicks, and this kind of has those elements to it. That's one of the main reasons why I like Human Beast so much.
Yeah. I was watching it thinking that, I'll bet you Brad likes this one a lot.
Yeah. And then next to it is Night of the Werewolf, just because the atmosphere and, it does have that universal monster feel to it. I just love some of the shots, and especially, I believe these are the same transfers as the Victory Blu-rays that were put out years ago. They still look okay. But there's some really good cinematography and lighting. Especially like when he's just drooling and like the blood's like just coming out of his mouth. I don't know who's lighting these Nashi films, but sometimes they like strike solid gold on, setup of the atmosphere and just the look of the film and capturing certain, just aspects of it. They're really, really great. And I know, it's a lot with Nashi films, so I know it's a big partial, big thing with him, doing all that.
I'm glad we all like Night of the Werewolf, but I do kind of have a question. What's going on with that long hold of the mask in the beginning?
Yeah, at first I thought it was, because I remember watching it when I bought the Blu-ray before, but I don't remember it being that long. But I actually rewinded to look at the timestamp because the music's playing.
Yeah.
Once they hit them, and it was like, wait a second, it's like a good maybe 20 seconds where there's nothing happening.
There's no titles or anything. I can't remember. Was there not any titles?
No, it's just nothing.
It's just a freeze
just
on
the werewolf. The iron mask they put on him, right?
Right, yeah. Once they hit him and he bleeds and, he looks down, then it stops. And it just stops. And then, maybe about 20 – I don't know how long it is. I would say a good – but it's a long 20 seconds, maybe even 30. And then all of a sudden, Paul Nashi's name pops up with the title of the movie. And I don't remember it being that long. But, yeah, I agree. Maybe they're just running, the titles came up short.
Yeah, who knows?
Yeah. Or it was really expensive and they're going to get their money's worth.
Could have been.
It took Paul Nashi 37 takes to do that shot, so he just wanted to know people that he did it. Who knows?
I love it when – I love how involved he is with these films. Which one was he – the zombie one is when he's like this devil character, yeah?
Yeah. And he plays multiple characters.
Krishna.
Oh my God. Yeah. Yes, yes, okay. He plays like this Hindu Krishna character in Vengeance of the Zombies.
Yeah.
And
plays the devil and then plays the other. Yeah.
And I'm like, because that's the one thing about the these films is like he was in Spain, so his production company and everything was in Spain, but he would kind of do what other companies would do would be like, well, you know, this movie takes place in this country or whatever, so, you know, but it's all in Spanish, so of course he's going to play the Hare Krishna guy or whatever, the Hindu guy, and so that, I was trying to think, like, did they actually use any Indian actors at all, or was it all Spanish actors for that one in particular? That one was a bit jarring. I know that in Human Beasts,
no, there's actually Japanese actors in Human Beasts.
Yeah. No, I think is it Vengeance that they do? Because it's not, they use, don't they use some Filipino actors in that?
They must. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, they must. But it's funny seeing these, and I think they're overdubbed in Spanish, and they did that in Human Beast too, where they were in a few scenes the Japanese actress was overdubbed in Spanish, and then there's a scene where a couple are talking to each other and they're talking in Japanese, so there's the Spanish subtitles, and then we have the English subtitles on top.
Yeah, but I think it's pretty wild though. Like you know, obviously he's writing the films and directing them and starring in them, but he is casting himself as multiple characters. And at times, like, we laugh at that now, but, you know, back when Nashi's doing it, we're like, man, this guy's a fucking badass. You know, right now, like, if people do it, it's like, this pretentious fuck couldn't hire somebody else to play these roles. But when Nashi does it, like, we want more Nashi. Like, we love that he... You know, but he's also can play a good character actor. He can play a monster, and that's one thing about him. I know that there's kind of some lost in translation thing. I don't know if we ever talked about this on the show, but it's for someone that doesn't speak the language, it's kind of hard to pick out a bad actor. You know, if you're watching a Japanese film, a Korean film, you don't know if the actors are bad or not because right. You don't know how they're saying their lines. So to me, Nashi nails like every character. I was just always curious if, like, you know, someone speaks Spanish fluently, if they're like, oh, Paul Nashi's like, you know, oh, I can't say this with Stephanie on the show. Oh, he's kind of like John Cusack, where John Cusack plays John Cusack. I'm so sorry. I know. I'll
see my way out.
Oh, man.
All about
I don't know, Stephanie, I don't know if I agree with Brad at all on this.
I love John Cusack. I love him so much.
No, I really understand what you're saying.
But he always plays Lloyd Dobler, you know, but, you know, or he always plays Hoops. But I dig that. He does it well.
I need to interject, though. You know, my favorite John Cusack thing that he does is his, like, eye twitch back and forth when he gets really focused and he's talking to someone and he, like, his eyes dart back and forth. You guys ever notice that? When he gets all
intense. Yeah, fucking yeah. Say anything. That's all he does. It's the best. Say anything.
It's the best. I don't think that's actually legitimately possible. Like, I don't know if I can do that. Like, but he does it and it's amazing.
Yeah, but, you know, with Paul Nashi, he always plays kind of that brooding, like, you know, beast of a character, and then, you know, he plays the villain and plays the good guy, and it's like, you know, but he also, like, kills himself off a lot too, which I always find intriguing. Like in the movies, like, he'll kill off one of the characters, usually they come back, but, you know, still, it's I don't know, he's very much involved, and I think that's where growing up and watching the films and learning more about film and everything else, you know, you can really feel the passion behind it. You know, it's not more or less pretentious like a lot of these people do now, but it's you can tell, like, he really cared. It's not like, oh, no one else can do this but me. He was just so involved with his projects. And I really admire that about him.
Yeah, I love John Cusack. With sincerity. It's too late. It's fine.
No, I know what you mean. Like, you just watch him and you're immediately drawn to it. And even though it's completely off the wall
you know, comparison. This is the reason why I like shot on video films, is because you can feel the passion and, you know, drive behind it, very much like these Paul Naschy films. Like, you could tell that he really cared. And, you know, even though he was dishing out countless movies like back to back, each one is crafted in such a sense, other than Vengeance for the Zombies, or Vengeance of the Zombies. Is it of? It would be of, yeah.
Vengeance of the Zombies. That's, yeah.
That was his student film.
Yeah. Yeah. No,
maybe he was teaching during that time. I don't know.
Yeah. It's weird because the other ones are so.
Do you like that one, Stephanie? You haven't said anything.
Okay. I can't disagree with what's been said, but I really.
That's totally fine.
Maybe it's the eyeliner. I don't know, but there's some wacky charminess about it. It has kind of a manic sloppiness about it that I kind of appreciate.
Yeah.
But I would say it's definitely the lesser title in the set.
This is the one where the music is just totally off, right? It's just
kind of
in all of them, in my opinion. But yeah, that's like
this is the most
music.
It's equivalent to like the metal that just comes in like in Phenomena. Where it's like it's so great though, because it's like you sit there and you're like, man, this is really awesome. And you're like digging it and you're like, why is this song playing though? Like, I don't get it. But it's cool though.
A guy got murdered, I'm just bopping my head. Psychopath, it's great.
Well, yeah, because it's this disco fun stuff and kind of weird stuff when like something serious is possibly about to happen, but it's just like boop 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 boop. I don't know. I can't do it. But did you know he played the Wolfman? We're kind of going all over the place with Naschy here, but we really want you guys to discover these films on your own. But he's played the Wolfman character 12 times.
And I believe Chaney said that.
Did you? I must have spaced off for a second. Lon Chaney only did it for like 5 Wolfman films.
Yeah, and he plays the same character.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's and they're no relation to one another. They're not sequels or anything. But he's just like got stuck. He created that character and then he stuck with it for quite some time.
Sorry, so I had to repeat ourselves. I apologize.
No, it's okay. It's okay. I still love you.
Kind of talking about his sincerity, he has a natural charm. So I really can't speak to his acting in his original language, unfortunately, but I think the charm comes through in whatever language. And there is a part of that. He reminds me so much of John Belushi. Like in his looks.
I could see that. Yeah. I could totally see that. And my dad.
Yes. Brad's dad, John Belushi. I love this guy.
And then one thing I text Stephanie the other day, I was rewatching Blue Eyes of the Broken Doll, and they totally ripped off the music from Young Girls of Rochefort. Like, I'm watching it and I'm listening. I was like, where is this fucking song from? And like, I'm listening. I was like, oh yeah. And like, I pull it up on Spotify and I listen to it and I was like, you gotta be kidding me. Like, it's so, like, I mean, it's not the same song. It's just that, you know, they hit the same exact notes. I think it's almost like when Vanilla Ice explains how he didn't rip off Under Pressure. When he says it, theirs is ding, 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 da da ding, ding. And ours is ding, 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 da da ding, ding. Tss. Like, it's equivalent to that. Like, it's like they're missing one note, so it's not the same. But I thought that was pretty interesting, you know, because I thought only Italians did that. But apparently, you know, if you dig deep enough in some, you know, Spanish whore, they're lifting some French musicals to make their pseudo giallo. You know, but Blue Eyes of the Broken Doll, you know, I rewatched it because it was one of the films that I wasn't that familiar with on this set. I think that I've seen it. I can't really remember. I didn't remember anything about it, so it must have. And I rewatched it, and I was like, okay, it's kind of, you know, pretty much forgettable, I think, of the set. Even though I think Vengeance is the worst film, in the set. I can remember a lot about it because it's so wacky and silly. But Blue Eyes of the Broken Doll just seems a little dull. And that's one of the reasons why I rewatched it. But it didn't grab me. Like, it felt, you know, and I see what you're saying about it, Sean. It just felt like it was trying to be too many things. Mm-hmm. And it just didn't really stay on track, it seems. But I could be alone in that. It just didn't grab me like some of the other films or as memorable as something like Vengeance. So
you liked how Human Beast was all over the place, but it didn't quite work for Blue Eyes for you.
No, yeah, I think with Human Beast, like, it stays on track, though, when it wants to. Like, I like the turn of events. Like, it's we could say that Blue Eyes of the Broken Doll is very much, what was that film that we just talked about, Sean, with Vinegar Syndrome, that is like a pseudo comp where he tries to drown the woman in the pool?
Oh,
shit. I'm just drawing.
God damn it. Hold on.
I'm drawing a fucking, he tries to drown the woman in the pool and.
Yeah. I'm getting there. I'm thinking.
He's always like, has the
double
paraplegic.
Exposure. Double exposure.
Yeah. Double exposure. Like,
good Lord.
Like, with those films, they're so mixed in. Like, they're a comedy at one second. They're an action movie, you know, at one point. Like, they can just never focus on something. Human Beast, at least, like, it starts off, like, you know, with Sean, he noticed, like, some, you know, some Yakuza elements. It's very much like a Euro crime movie. And then once he actually gets injured and he gets taken in, it turns into this, like, weird, like, you know, Stockholm, not Stockholm syndrome like that per se, but, you know, kind of this weird obsession horror thing. And then it kind of goes back to, like, kind of like how a Euro crime movie would end. Like, it stays on track during those moments. Something with Blue Eyes of the Broken Doll, it seems that while the film's moving, they can't really stay on track of one thing or another. Like, it jumps too much. Like, I could say Human Beast, like, for the first, like, 30 minutes is, you know, a Euro crime movie. Then it jumps into, like, this weird, like, you know, horror thing, and then it jumps back. But it doesn't kind of deviate from the track that it's on. Blue Eyes of the Broken Dolls all over the place, kind of like how I speak most of the time. I think that's the reason why I couldn't get into it.
My one criticism of why I really couldn't get into it was he walks into like a bar or whatever, orders a sandwich and some wine, takes a sip of the wine, and then takes a sandwich.
That's a big fucking sandwich.
But he takes a sandwich to go.
And he leaves the
wine
there.
That sandwich has more bread on it than anything in the world.
But that sandwich was served by Javier Bardem's mother.
Oh, shit. Here.
Oh, my gosh.
Looked like, yeah.
Deep dive into trivia. Yeah, that just,
oh, deep cuts with Stephanie Crawford.
Tune in, guys. It's coming up. Not really.
Wow, I did not know that.
Or you just can't. You just, you know.
Is that why that dude's so big? He just kept fed bread his whole entire life? It's like, Mom, fix me a sandwich. It's like just hands her like a big fucking loaf of bread. But not even like a loaf. It's just those big fucking, what do they call those? Like, there's a specific name for them. And it's not like a loaf of bread. It's like a fucking bar of bread.
Bread cast.
Yes, thank you. You know, and just fucking eat those. Because when Paul Nashe gets the sandwich, it's like, how are you supposed to eat that? Like, he like leaves the drink. You know, he takes the sandwich. I was like, you're supposed to dip that sandwich in liquid to like fucking soften that shit up. And you know that bread ain't super soft. It's been out for a few hours.
Like a French dip.
So,
yeah.
Pilar Bardem is like, Stephanie's not bullshitting us.
Why would I lie about that?
I don't know. I just such a deep cut. I was like, I need to research this. That's ridiculous.
No, I believe anything this girl says, man. She's fucking on fire when she knows this shit.
Mother of Carlos Bardem, Monica Bardem, and Javier Bardem. Holy mother of God. That's amazing.
Is she like an actress, though? Like,
she was in
that just mostly films. Soap operas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
That's ridiculous. That's,
I still don't like this movie anymore, though. So Bardem
really?
Couldn't say
shirtless wood chopping.
Oh man, some
there
pretty
is
good
like
shirtless wood chopping.
That's all I got. But
he is all about himself though in that one shot where the camera just does that angle and he just like puts the hatchet down and puts his hands on his hips. And I was like, Dad? And then, you know, he just ends up being Paul Nashy doing Paul Nashy stuff. But, yeah, he's great. But at moments, you know, he really does focus on himself. I think if Paul Nashy existed today and was doing this, we would probably be laughing about it. But I don't know. At a certain time, you know, you're able to get away with a lot more from back in the day. But he's really funny in situations like that because he really does focus on himself. And I love certain scenes, like in Horizons from the Tomb. It's just like, I almost say Horizons from the Grave each time. But Horizons from the Tomb, like just when he's doing his own thing and kind of like that floating laughing head that he's doing. Yeah. And has the scenes with himself, like it's just that's what makes these movies kind of so special, though, because he's really, really enjoying it. And I think that's with any movie, though, with a lot of us, is if we notice like people are having a good time, it I don't know, there's something that it attaches to the movie, like you're part of it, you know, you're part of being friends with them, you're part of the gang. And I think it's kind of like what are these Paul Nashy films turn out to be.
What are they releasing in this next set? We know off the top of our heads, the Paul Nashy 2.
Hunchback of the Morgue.
Yeah.
Werewolf and the Yeti.
Oh,
the
Werewolf
Devil's
and the
Possessed.
Yeti. Someone was talking about Werewolf and the Yeti, and I was like, that's something that I think I need to see.
Dragonfly for Each Corpse.
Very nice.
Anything? And Exorcism. Or Exorcismo, which is better, in my opinion.
Well,
Devil's Possessed. I was hoping for Curse. I'm sure that will be in 3, Curse of the Devil and Werewolf Shadow, because I have that DVD as well.
He really wants to sell it, everybody. So just buy both these sets. We want a third one.
The artwork on the second set is a bit goofy, though. Do you guys agree to that? I mean, he looks...
I haven't seen it yet.
It looks a little bit like, you know, maybe a 15-year-old got a hold of the watercolors and a little bit.
Maybe a little Ringo Starr.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, yes.
It doesn't look like Paul Nashy in that picture.
Yeah.
I don't know. Something's because this first one is like really well done. And the second one, like something's off with that. I don't know. It's like when there's a story of somebody was like trying to restore like some old religious paintings, frescoes or whatever. I don't know. When you paint on plaster, right? They used to do that. Back in the day, and somebody accidentally like washed off this portrait of Jesus on accident, like someone who worked there, and they, like this was like a, you know, few hundred year old painting or whatever, and he tried to like repaint it, and it looks awful. That's what it looks like. What somebody did.
It's kind of like when Mr. Bean
collection too.
Mr. Bean movie when he sneezes on like the Mona Lisa or is it Whistler's mother that he sneezes on?
Yeah. Totally looks like that.
Mr. Bean did Mr. Bean the cover.
They did. It doesn't look right. They were like looking at a Ringo Starr. I need to find someone who looks kind of like Paul Nashy. Oh, Ringo Starr.
They should have just asked me for my dad. Oh,
but yeah, I'm excited for this. This second
circulate set, those pictures, man.
Yeah.
All right, we need to wrap up. Brad is Brad's up late, so we got to start wrapping up with this one.
1 in the morning here, guys.
Yeah, I know. All right. Any final words on Paul Nashy other than like, I really think this set is going to introduce a lot of people to him and his movies, and I'm hoping, you know, we see a little bit of Nashy resurgence. And more people can get Nashy.
There you go. I was waiting for it.
Yeah.
I'm hoping. Oh, go ahead.
Nope. No, just for the people who maybe aren't familiar and they'll look at the cover and maybe think, well, I don't like period horror films, or just so you know, there are contemporary ones. Human Beast is batshit, in my opinion. It's a lot of fun. I think it's a great set. It kind of jumps all over the place. I think pretty much everyone will find something to enjoy. So don't judge either a book by the cover.
I thought it was going to be all kind of period, you know, horror, like Hammer, you know, but it's not. And that's the thing, even the second collection, they're kind of keeping that motif, but there's a lot more to these films, even if they start a certain way. Like most of these, they would start in a certain period, but then they would get modern, you know, for the 70s. Right. But,
and he's shirtless wearing jeans.
Yeah. Yeah. Brad, any final words on Paul Nashy?
No. I'm just happy that the set's out, and you know, it's I hope that we get some of the titles that were pretty rare over here. Because I know a lot of them hit DVD with Victory Films. But I'm hoping that we you know, they dive deep, and this is kind of a continuation thing with the kind of how the Vincent Price collection's going over at Screen Factory. I hope that we kind of get a couple other Paul Nashy sets.
Hell yeah.
Here.
All right. I want to thank, we got a new sponsor I need to mention real quick. I need to talk about our pin for Dustin Pace 2, but this kind of leads into it. When we were starting to sell this pin to raise money for Dustin Pace's wife, Tiffany, people were concerned about our shop, saying that, hey, you know, your website's not secure. So I was like, oh, shit, you're right, you know, and that needs to happen with the store and everything. So I have a neighbor who runs a WordPress support and maintenance kind of company. So they're sponsoring our site. They're called Maintain, MAINTAINN. So there's a banner at the bottom of the page. If you're someone who hosts websites and you need someone to kind of help secure your site, make sure it's all up and running all the time. Because I know I have DreamHost and they kind of do that, but it's kind of a pain in the ass if you have to try to get someone to help you. These guys are always making sure your site's running all the time. They're always doing backups or making sure that even if your site is down, like, they'll work for you to kind of get a backup up. So anyway, if you want to check out more, there's a banner at the bottom of the page. Just scroll all the way down. You'll see it. Click on it. Check it out if you're someone who maintains websites. They've saved me a huge amount of headaches when we were starting to kind of roll out, when I was trying to revamp the site and the shop part of it, the store. So need to give them a shout out. But also, yeah, we are trying to raise money for Dustin Pace's wife. As I mentioned on the show last time before the show started, a friend of the show, he's done some artwork for us as well, passed away, and we would really like to help his family. There's a GoFundMe set up, and there's links all over the place for that GoFundMe. It's on the page for the pin. He was designing a pin for us based off Pumpkinhead, and we hadn't pulled the trigger on it yet. We were trying to wait until we had sold through some of our other pins before we'd pull the trigger on the pin that Dustin designed for us. Unfortunately, he passed away before we can do that. So we do have the pin he designed. All the money, all of it, is going to his wife, Tiffany. And if you'd like to help out with that, it's $10. You can go to our site at thescreamcast.com, click on the store, and you'll be able to find it right there. If you can order, if you're in the U.S., through the site. If you're overseas, international, just hit us up. go to our, there's a link directly to our email. Drop us a line. We can do a quote for you and send you like a little invoice and do it that way. So you're not completely left out of the loop. We just had some issues when we were trying to ship out international when we first did these pins that kind of created a huge headache for us and we couldn't really automate it. So we had to do it that way. So if you'd like to help out, please consider buying the Pumpkin Duddy pin or just go to their GoFundMe. There's a link in the all the information for the pin directly to the GoFundMe. We'd really like to help them out. And he was a really good guy and a really great friend of the show. So it's please help out if you can. Moving on to other sponsors, go to screamcast.com/sponsors. You'll find them all there. Coffee Shop of Horrors, of course, if you use the code Screamcast when you check out, you get 10% off of your order. Grindhousevideo.com, if you're a $5 and up patron, they will be supplying some giveaways for us each month. So please check out all of their movies over at grindhousevideo.com. I always like to check them first whenever we have anything. And we want to thank Wolfman of Mars for providing the music and Kevin Spencer and inkspatters.com for designing our logo. And that's it for the sponsors. Brad, do you have anything else?
Damn, you were almost flawless that entire time.
That is beautiful.
I'm trying. But, you know, support our sponsors, but right now all of our attention is on getting this money raised for Dustin Pace, for Tiffany and their family, cover some of the funeral costs and stuff like that. So that's the number one thing. Please please be generous, and I would love to have all these pins pre-sold before they come in. I would like them to come in, send them out to everybody, and I would like to get that money as fast as I can over to Tiffany.
I'll be getting them probably here in the next week or so.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
But I do know you know, I wanted to thank GLP helping us out because they did I told them the story of what happened, and they did basically dropped everything, did a rush order, and, I mean, really helped us out with the cost of the pins because bulk of pins ain't cheap.
Yeah.
But they did everything they could in order to lower the cost for us so more money can go towards the family, which – is greatly appreciated. But I will have the pins. So I know we have a lot of listeners in Austin, and I'll be there at Fantastic Fest, and you'll be able to pick the pins for me. We could do it that way, too.
Cool.
So I think because a lot of international people will be there, too.
Okay.
So I know that Kevin, he wants one. He lives in Scotland, but because I think that's – it's like we mailed the package to Scotland. It was like fucking $18 or some shit.
That's ridiculous.
But, anybody that's international is going to be a Fantastic Fest. You can just drop me a line. I'll save you a pin, and we can just do it that way.
Awesome. All right. Very cool. Stephanie, thanks again for joining us.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. And I pre-ordered my pin. They look amazing. So I'm really looking forward to that. Awesome. And thank you guys for doing that.
Of course. Stephanie, where can people find you on the internet?
Just Scrawfish on Twitter. And that'll pretty much do it.
Very nice. All right. And me and Brad, you can find us all of our info is over at thescreamcast.com. All of our social media links are there. You can find our personal links through that. I want to thank all of you guys for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.
Yay.
Bye.
Oh, don't tell me you're leaving. The party's just begun.
What? OneOfUs.net has been your one-stop shop for all things geek for years. But there's a side to them many of you have never heard. The subscription side. Subscribe and listen to great podcasts like The Breakfast Pub, The Original Gentleman, and the Watch a Movie With Us series. Head on over to OneOfUs.net and don't forget your towel.